listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
An increase in hostilities between the U.S. and Russia. Russia's ambassador to Lebanon, Alexander Zasipkin, warned on Tuesday that, quote, Russian forces will confront any U.S. aggression on Syria by intercepting the missiles and striking their launch pads, closed quote. That warning followed a series of threats from the White House and from the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, on Monday. Russia's ambassador to the United Nations, Vasily Nebenzia, issued a terse statement on Monday at the U.N. Security Council on the matter.
Thank you, sir. Sir, if you believe it is a great pleasure for me to speak about the issue that we will talk about now, to make a statement on the side, then you are mistaken. But unfortunately, the situation is such that I will have to say a great deal today, and it will be incumbent upon you to listen to what I have to say. We are grateful to Mr. Demistura for his briefing, as well as to Mr. Markram. The Russian Federation demanded, called for this meeting to be held on the agenda item, threats to international peace and security. Insofar as we are deeply alarmed at the fact that in a number of capitals, above all in Washington, and those blindly following it, London and Paris, there was a deliberate policy undertaken to stoke international tensions. The leadership of the United States, of the United Kingdom, and of France, without any justifications and without considering the consequences, have engaged in a confrontational policy against Russia and Syria, and they are prompting others to follow suit. A broad arsenal of methods is being leveraged: slander, insults, hawkish rhetoric, blackmail, sanctions, and threats to use force against the sovereign state. Russia is being unpardonably threatened. The tone with which this is being done has gone beyond the threshold of what is acceptable, even during the Cold War. Such boorishness against my country is something which your predecessors did not take the liberty to undertake. What is next? We recall a rhetorical question which the Russian president put forward in 2015 from the United Nations General Assembly to our Western partners, above all the United States, concerning their reckless geopolitical experiments in the Middle East. Do you understand now what you have done? And the response at that time hung in the air. But there is a response. No, you do not understand. Just as you fail to understand what you are doing now. The lack of a clear strategy on any issue is appalling not just to us. It confounds not only us. This is confounding to the majority of those seated here. But they have decided not to openly put this forward to you. Following you, everywhere you go, regardless of what everything you touch, chaos is left behind. In the brackish waters of which you try to take out fish, something. But only mutant fish are being taken out. I will put another rhetorical question forward. Do you understand the dangerous threshold towards which you are bringing the world? One of the areas where there's hostility that is most stark, that is on Syria. The terrorists and extremists supported by external sponsors are enduring a defeat there. Let us recall that we are talking about those terrorists and extremists who you supplied, financed, and deployed in the country to oust a legitimate government. And now it is clear why this is causing hysteria among those who invested political and material capital in these dark forces. Recently, thanks to the efforts undertaken by Russia, in line with implementation of Security Council resolutions, a large-scale operation has been undertaken to lift the siege of Eastern Ghouta. Its residents, for a number of years, were forced to endure the mockery and torture of fighters. More than 150,000 civilians were evacuated from that Damascus suburb. Purely voluntarily, with the requisite security conditions being provided. Tens of thousands of them have already been able to return to the liberated areas, and many met with their relatives. There has been no change in democratic composition, which is being shouted about by supporters of the Syrian opposition, has occurred. These are lies. With the leaders of armed groups, there were difficult negotiations that took place. As a result, many of them left the areas they had occupied with full respect for guarantees for their safety. Incidentally, during these transportation operations, several attempts were undertaken to stage terrorist attacks when the militants attempted to reach the buses with the Shahid belts. Other preferred to settle their status with the Syrian authorities. Thanks to presidential amnesty, they now will be able to return to civilian life, and subsequently, it is possible they may enter the Syrian security forces. We're talking about implementation of a UN principle, demobilization, disarmament, and reintegration. However, this is positive dynamic is not to the liking of some. Foreign sponsors through Western countries were willing to take up any straw just to maintain a hotbed of terrorist resistance at a striking distance from the Syrian capital. This for the fighters to continue to terrorize ordinary civilians, to seize their food, and to request from the international international, to beg of the international community that humanitarian assistance be delivered. Incidentally, they were not prepared to share medicine with ordinary civilians, as was shown in the inspection of the strongholds left behind by the fighters. As was the case in the past in eastern Aleppo, improvised hospital facilities in basements were full of medicine, which, as a result of sanctions, Western sanctions, were not provided to Damascus and other government-controlled areas. Also, large storage heights were found, as were the bodies, the corpses of people who had been subjected to torture. We are stunned at the scale of the tunnels that were being used by jihadists, and some of them, small trucks were able to freely move about. These surprising underground facilities brought together the positions of groups who were viewed by some as moderate, and they were linked to the strongholds of Jabhat al-Nusra. On 6 April, the new head of Jaish al-Islam, following instructions of sponsors, derailed the evacuation of the 4th party of fighters from Duma and resumed the rocket and mortar firing against residential areas in Damascus. The firing targeted Meze, Meze 86, Ishal Vurur, Abu Rumana, and Omiyadov.
Umayyad.
According to official information, 8 died, 37 civilians were wounded. Unfortunately, we failed to see statements from Western capitals condemning the shelling of a historical district of Damascus. The following day, 7 April, fighters accused the Syrian authorities of dropping barrel bombs with toxic substances. At the same time, the versions were being mixed up. It was either called sarin, at times chlorine, or at times a mix of toxic gases. Based on a well-known scheme, these rumors were immediately taken up by those financed by Western capitals. I'm referring to NGOs and the white helmets who are mendaciously acting under the cloak of health professionals. And these reports were also taken up and transferred to media outlets. It behooves us once again to state that many of these dubious opposition structures have a clear list of the email addresses of representatives of Security Council members, which shows that some of our colleagues with a reckless approach towards their status are leaking sensitive information to their protégés. Incidentally, all should recall the way that accidentally, the white helmets put on the internet a video which showed preparation for staging a so-called victim of an alleged attack perpetrated by the Syrian army. In 2011, the chemical serial began, and this continues to be shown to us with the calculation for each new episode to be more resonant than the one prior to it. In Washington, London, and Paris, immediate conclusions were drawn, pinning blame on the Syrian authorities, or, as they call it, the regime. Has nobody put the question to themselves, why does Damascus need this? There were insults against the Syrian government. However, the Syrian leadership. However, the main burden of responsibility was pinned on Russia and Iran, and I think that this is hardly surprising to anybody at this point. Now this has been done based on current trends immediately without any investigation being conducted. On 8 April, the Syrian troops sweeping through Al-Shimuna near Duma found a homemade manufacturing area of Jaish al-Islam to manufacture chemical substances artisanally. Chlorine agents of German manufacturer and special equipment were also discovered. In Istanbul, the opposition journalist Asad Hamid, who is based, put on his Twitter page a video allegedly from the area of the incident. This has probably from the White Helmets. An unknown individual is next to a handmade bomb with a chemical which allegedly struck the bedroom of a building in Duma. All of this is accompanied by comments about another attack by the regime against civilians. The staged nature of this action is something of which there's no doubt. The trajectory of the alleged trajectory of the bombs is unnatural. Fell through a roof and naturally, calmly fell into a bed without damaging that bed. A wooden bed without damaging the wooden bed clearly was placed there prior to preparation for the staging. And there's an interesting coincidence. The chemical provocation in Duma on Saturday, 7 April, occurred immediately after the U.S. delegation at the Security Council received instructions to convene for today, Monday, 9 April, to convene expert-level consultations on their draft resolution on the mechanism to investigate incidents with chemical weapons. The initial text today has far-reaching changes and revisions. Under these obscure circumstances, of course, we need to get to the bottom of what is taking place. However, we need to do so in an honest, objective, impartial way without disregarding the principle of presumption of innocence and by no means prejudging the outcome of the investigation. Despite the provocations, the Russian specialists continued their efforts to resolve the situation in eastern Ghouta. In afternoon, 8 April, Sunday, following a new agreement that was reached, the evacuation of Jaish al-Islam fighters resumed. Following the liberation of Duma from fighters, Russian specialists were sent there, specialists on radiological, chemical, and biological protection to collect evidence and information. They took soil samples, which showed the lack of nerve agent and chlorine-containing substances. Locals were interviewed about the cessation of resistance to the fighters. Not a single local resident confirmed the chemical attack having taken place. A local hospital, there were no reports about symptoms from a toxic substance such as chlorine. Other medical facilities are not located in Duma. The bodies of the dead as a result of contamination were not found. Medical personnel and residents have no information about their potential burial areas, thereby the use of sarin and chlorine is not confirmed. Incidentally, the representatives of the Syrian Red Crescent refuted the statement allegedly made on their behalf on the delivery of assistance to victims of toxic gas. I call upon those who will speak against me, slandering the regime, to proceed from the premise that there was no chemical weapons attack. Sweden drew up a draft resolution to investigate the incident. In principle, in order to conduct an investigation, OPCW needs no resolution. However, we are willing to consider this resolution. Today, we propose that what you envisage in your project, in your draft, be done. Let the OPCW, which through the technical, the Director General of the Technical Secretariat, Mr. Zumduk, stated a willingness to get to the bottom of what took place. Let it immediately, tomorrow, fly to Damascus. There, the Syrian authorities and Russian troops will provide conditions to travel to the area of the alleged incident for them to familiarize themselves with the situation. Incidentally, this is what President Trump and other Western leaders called upon us to undertake. As for the possibility of a chemical attack being a possibility, this was repeatedly warned about by the Syrians at the Russian Center for the Reconciliation of Opposing Sides. It was stated that in order to take a film of a chemical attack, and I put this in quotes, the necessary equipment has already been brought in. We, too, made the relevant statements of the Security Council. You've heard these warnings. You've heard, but deliberately ignore them, insofar as they do not align with the doctrinal views of those who sleep with and see in the elimination of a legitimate government in another Arab country. Still, what is not being looked into is the fact that a significant number of chemical weapons were discovered November-December 2017 in Syrian territory that had been liberated from fighters at terrorist storage sites in Zakhariya and Al-Zafir in Hama province. 21-ton containers were discovered. More than 50 munitions were found, which contained toxic chemicals. In Tel Adli, Idlib province, 24 tons of toxic chemicals were discovered, and this is believed to be chlorine. At the storage site in Ма'адамия, 30 kilometers northeast of Damascus, 140-160-millimeter caliber munitions were found. Plastic canisters were found with phosphorus. With phosphorus substances and compounds. In the area of Al-Sarita, Idlib province, an industrial complex was found for the synthesis of various toxic substances. 54 chemical munitions were found, with 44 chemical containers were found, and these could be used for the manufacture of toxic substances. From the beginning of this year alone, four instances were reported of fighters using toxic chemicals from against positions where government troops are located in Sudja and El-Mshaif. More than 100 Syrian troops were hospitalized. 3 March, when Hazrama and Aftris were liberated in eastern Ghouta, fighters from government troops discovered in a tunnel an underground artisanal manufacturing site to make chemical munitions of a handmade nature. And this is far from a full list. It points to the wrongdoing and abuses by the irreconcilable opposition. However, the OPCW's experts being sent there to identify evidence is not something which we see people eager to do. We demand that OPCW verify all of those areas. Access can be provided. Also, information is surfacing that at Tanf, the camp, American instructors trained a number of groups of fighters to stage provocations with chemical weapons used to create a pretext for a strike. It was clear to us that the attempt to shelter terrorists and at the same time to punish the regime so hated by some Western capitals will sooner or later be undertaken. Speaking heads on television screens sought to repeat last year's attack against Syria. Last year's strike, this morning, there were strikes, missile strikes, against the Tifor airfield in Homs province. We are deeply troubled by such actions. Provocations in Dumguma echo last year's incident in Han Shihun. The unifying moment aspect is the fact that there's a planned nature of these attacks. Analysis of the U.S.'s operations prior to and after the incident in Han Shihun in April 2017 2007 shows that Washington ahead of time prepared for its operation. The U.S. Porter and Ross naval destroyers from 4 to 7 April last year, that is when the toxic substance was used in Hanshikun before the strike against the Shayrat airbase, were already present in the Mediterranean waters where they were engaged in planned operations. They did not enter the ports where an exchange of munitions could have been taken place by increasing the number of cruise missiles. Inter alia, 4 to 5 April, the Porter and destroyer was located southeast of Sicily, and the Ross naval destroyer was in passage from the Rota naval base in the area southern, more south of Sardinia. Later, 6 April, an expedited movement of both naval destroyers was reported in the firing positions south, more southwest of Cyprus. From there, on 7 April, they conducted a mass strike against the Shayrat airfield. At the same time, the number of Tomahawk missiles that were launched, 59 units, surpassed the overall munitions for two naval destroyers if they had actually been engaged in the anti-missile defense operations that had been assigned to them. And for that purpose, only 48 units were necessary. Thereby, U.S. naval vessels, even prior to the chemical incident in Hanshikun, entered military service with strike, fit for strike equipment that is with an increase of cruise missiles that were more than necessary for the anti-missile defense, and this could attest to prior planning by Washington of an act, a strike against Damascus. The fake news on Saturday from Duma are geared inter alia towards drawing attention of society away from the Skripal case, which was muddled up by London, and pooling and throwing on Russia completely unconfirmed accusations, and with the aim of pooling solidarity to build an anti-Russian alliance. Now the English are stepping away from a transparent investigation and putting forward specific responses for the questions put, and at the same time they are sweeping up their tracks. During the Security Council meeting 5 April on the Skripal case, we cautioned that an attempt to unjustifiably place blame on us of having had a hand in the Salisbury incident was linked to the Syrian chemical dossier. Yesterday, this issue saw new interesting developments. For the moment, the UK Foreign Minister Boris Johnson continues to disclose the things against Russia and attempt to be witty, and here is the following pearl. Experts of British naval experts south of Cyprus intercepted on the day of Skripal's poisoning, intercepted reports from Damascus suburbs to Moscow, and this is what Times is reporting. It contains the following sentence. The phrase, the message has been delivered. The parcel has been delivered, and two individuals successfully left. This turns out to be part of the intelligence information provided by London to allies prior to the expulsion of Russian diplomats. However, is it not clear that there's an irrefutable link here? Is that not clear to all? Syria, Russia, Salisbury. I would hint to the British intelligence services, and I will do so without charge. Another powerful course. Why would not propose that Novichok, which is so light now, was reached Salisbury directly from Syria by a parcel to cover up their tracks?
Какое-то убожество.
This is complete mockery here. Ambassador Haley recently stated that Russia will never be a friend of the United States. And I wish to respond to that. Friendship is something which is both reciprocal and voluntary. One cannot force a friendship. And we are not particularly keen to be friends with you. We are not begging to be friends with you.
Хотим-то всего ничего.
Well, what we want from you is really nothing.
Нормальных, цивилизованных
отношений. That is normal, civilized relations.
Которым вы нам высокомерно отказываете.
Which you arrogantly refuse.
Пренебрегая элементарными приличиями.
Disregarding elementary courtesy.
Впрочем, вы заблуждаетесь.
Basic courtesies.
Думая, что у вас
and you're
есть
misguided
друзья.
If you think that you have friends.
У вас так называемые
you
друзья только те,
have, so-called friends of yours are only those who cannot say no to you. And this is the sole criterion for friendship in your understanding. Russia has friends. And unlike yourselves, we do not have adversaries.
Мы через такую призму на мир не смотрим.
We do not view the world through that prism.
And
yes, international terrorism, that is our enemy.
Но мы по-прежнему
However, we continue to propose cooperation. This needs to be respectful and mutual cooperation. It needs to be geared towards resolving real, not imagined problems. And you should be equally interested, equally as interested as we are in such cooperation. Ultimately, as permanent members of the Security Council, we bear the main responsibility for the maintenance of international peace and security.
Based
through the relevant channels, we already convey to the U.S. that armed force under mendacious pretext against Syria, where at the request of the legitimate government of the country, Russian troops have been deployed, could lead to grave repercussions. We call upon Western politicians to scale down their hawkish rhetoric, to meaningfully consider possible repercussions and to cease the reckless spillover of threats to global security. What military misadventures of the West bring about are well known to us if we consider the examples of Yugoslavia, Iraq, and Libya. And nobody has vested you with the power to act as gendarmes, as policemen of the world, and at the same time to act both as investigators, procurators, judges, and executioners.
Призываем вернуться в правовое
we
поле,
call
соблюдать
for you return to the legal fold to comply with the UN Charter and to jointly tackle problems that arise rather than attempting at each step to advance your egotistical geopolitical games. All of the energy needs to be focused on support for the political process in Syria, to which end it is necessary to constructively pull the efforts of all influential players. Russia always stands ready to engage in such cooperation. To conclude, Mr. President, I wish to take this opportunity to request an open briefing of the Security Council on the outcomes of the UN assessment mission in Raqqa and the situation in the Rukban camp. As members of we see the way members of the Commission attempting to create a smokescreen around this issue, which is a result of their actions in Syria, including the operation to raise Raqqa to the ground through the bombings. No chemical provocations will detract attention from this, from what you've done. Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The drive towards war against Syria is unmistakable. The pretext is still another alleged chemical attack. As usual, no evidence is presented. As usual, conclusions are drawn before an independent investigation. But this time, there's a difference. Syria can defend itself and has powerful allies. We live in very dangerous times. Crosstalking Syria, I'm joined by my guest, Joe Loria in Washington. He's the editor-in-chief of ConsortiumNews.com and author of How I Lost by Hillary Clinton, with a foreword by Julian Assange. Also in Washington, we have Michael Maloof. He is a former senior security policy analyst in the Office of Secretary of Defense. And in New York, we have Richard Murphy. He is a former U.S. career ambassador to Syria and currently an adjunct scholar at the Middle East Institute. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let me go to Joe first in Washington. It seems to me that, you know, we have as president somebody very different than Rand as president. As little as a week ago, Donald Trump made a very public announcement that we'd be withdrawing from Syria. Fast forward up to the last few days or so, it looks like he's being forced to stay there, even if he doesn't want to stay there. We have an entire chorus of the media driving for war. The deep state is on board, of course. John Bolton is in place, and I have to make one exception. At least Tucker Carlson over at Fox at least decided to express his dissent here. Where are we, Joe? Where does this all stand? Go ahead.
Well, the fact that he wanted to withdraw from Syria makes it even less likely that the Syrian government was behind this attack. We are seeing what we've seen for a long, long time, a pattern of deception by the U.S. government, depending on who the enemy of the day is. If you want to go to war against Spain, they blew up the Maine. The North Vietnamese attacked a ship in the Gulf of Tonkin. Saddam had WMD. Russia invaded Ukraine, shut down a Malaysian airline, stole an election, tried to kill a former double agent in Britain, and now is somehow implicated in this chemical attack. This is what governments do. But there are also two other parties besides government. There's the press and the people. So governments lie, all governments lie, some worse than others, but the press's job is supposed to filter that and defend the public against government lies. But we see now a press that's completely obsessed with its own fame, with its careerism, with living through vicarious power of government, and they are letting the public down so that these conclusions before investigations begin, as you pointed out at the beginning, are let to stand. And this is, as you said, also said, very, very dangerous right now.
Richard, is on the table now full regime change by use of military force? Do you think that's in the cards right now? Go ahead, Richard, in New York.
I see no evidence that the administration has gone back to a position that you could say was early Obama, that it was time for Assad to step aside. I think this administration has reconciled itself that Assad is president and is likely to stay for a while.
Okay, well, Michael, but that doesn't really square with what we've heard over the last few days here. We have, Nikki Haley going off the rail. I mean, I thought Samantha Power was off had wandered off the reservation. But, you know, Nikki Haley takes the cake there. And then we also, I'm glad Joe mentioned it, we really have the drums of war in the media. It seems to me that they really want to box Trump in. If he does nothing, then he's bluster. If he does something, it's against international law, and it may be the law of unintended consequences by getting involved in this war. You never know, because if you look over the last 18 years, these military adventures never end the way they expect. Go ahead, Michael.
No, I think you're right. I think that even though President Trump wanted to get out, I think that other people who are surrounding him are much more determined that he stay. And actually, the fact that John Bolton is now the national security advisor, who was the fellow who really, really wanted us to go into Iraq on the premise that there was WMD. I think that the administration is slowly turning toward regime change again. I think that that's what they're going to go after. And the whole idea, I think, as far as a strategic policy, if there is one, for the United States ultimately is to divide Syria.
Yeah, well, that's been, that's the you can throw in the Turkish angle, which, of course, is a completely different program. But, looks like a partition is really what they're going to settle on here. You know, Joe, the interesting thing is that, I've never believed that anybody in the U.S. government, politicians, think tankers and all of that, they don't give a hoot about the Syrian people. They never have. And what I see now is this is a geopolitical gambit here. We've noticed that Russia is being held responsible for this alleged chemical attack, which there is no evidence presented to the public, which I guess the public is just getting used to it, a evidence-free foreign policy to go to war. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I don't think they care very much about the American public either, let alone the Syrians. I mean, this is another attempt to drag Russia into this. And Russia, we have no idea why, or even if there was a chemical attack, that hasn't even begun the investigation. We hear Nikki Haley saying we need an investigation, but on one side of her mouth and the other side of the mouth, Syria did it and Russia was behind it. This is not a safe situation, as you pointed out. I do think that they noticed that Russian-backed Syrian government was winning this war. It was practically over. The suburbs of Damascus, Ghouta, had been a thorn in the side of the Syrian government since the very beginning of this conflict 5 years ago. It was really a last stronghold after Aleppo and Idlib. So I think that that is a realization in the capitals of Riyadh and in Ankara and certainly in Washington, that this was the last, and by the rebels themselves, this was the last chance if they were going to try to reverse this tide. So the rebels needed to bring the U.S. into it, which is why it seems like they may very well have been behind, and Russia, by the way, behind this attack. And Russia warned, by the way, 3 weeks ago that this could happen, that there was a false flag, a chemical attack in the works. I don't know if that's what happened, but I certainly don't know that the Syrian government did it, but that doesn't seem to matter to people like Nikki Haley. Syria did it, and now we're going to see an attempt, maybe by the United States, to get deeply involved in this, to reverse the tide, and this is their last chance before the Syrian government wins this war, which they are on the verge of doing.
Richard, what national interest does Syria hold? Because, I mean, when Trump came in almost exactly a year ago, there was an alleged chemical incident, and then he ordered a Tomahawk a strike against Syria. No evidence. We know now Secretary Mattis came out and said, well, we don't have any evidence there ever was a chemical attack perpetrated by the Syrian government. I mean, what is wrong with these people? I mean, a year ago, an attack was made illegally against the country's sovereignty here. And now this is like rerunning this bad film. I mean, why? Syria has never attacked the United States. It is not a threat to American national interests. And now we're on the verge of going to war. Congress doesn't even get involved. It abrogates its responsibility to war making. I mean, why is Syria so important for the United States to get involved militarily? Please, Richard in New York.
It's start with its geographic position. It is in a key area, and the policies it has followed over the last few years of opening the doors to Iran to establish an increasing militia presence.
But Richard, isn't that the sovereign right? Isn't that the sovereign right of a state? Can't Syria have friends of its own choosing? Why does the United States determine what countries can have friends with whom? Why? Go ahead, Richard.
Well, come on. It's not just a matter of smiling at each other and having friends. They are actively assisting the government of Iran in creating a corridor across Iraq, Syria, to Hezbollah in Lebanon with the aim of mounting pressure on the Israelis. And that... That has to catch American attention.
Okay, that's really interesting. Let me go to Michael here because some sovereignty is more important than others. Okay, I mean Syria should have the legal sovereign right to make whatever friends it wants. Okay, the United States does that all the time. Okay, and nobody says anything about it. And let me go to Michael. You know, Israel's right on the border. They're one of the largest militaries in the world, most powerful, and it has never lifted one finger to fight terrorism in Syria. Actually, just the opposite. It's aided and abetted groups, okay? So, I mean, worried about Israel's concerns. Israel's part of the problem here. And I think, and Saudi Arabia is part of the problem here. Two key allies of the United States. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, this you hit right on it at the end there. This is as a flowing out of a deal that between the Saudis and the Israelis, and again the Saudis actually are pouring millions of dollars into the Sunni controlled areas as well as into Lebanon because they see a potential for Iran absolutely capturing them as far as the influence is concerned, and the Saudis are absolutely against that. And you have the Israelis who are trying to help that, and they see they see the forward movement of the Iranians as a direct threat to them, and as a consequence, I wouldn't doubt that the Israelis could initiate an attack on Lebanon almost any time.
Sure.
And I know people in Lebanon that I talk to are very concerned about that.
Joe, weigh in on that there, because is this policy being driven by Tel Aviv and Riyadh?
Well, certainly Riyadh and other Gulf states from the very beginning, and Turkey, wanted the overthrow of Assad. And that brings me to the point that whether you agree or like the Assad government or not, it's a fact that they have been on the defensive. This is an uprising. This was an attempt to overthrow a government. So you're on the defensive. So to invite Iran in and Russia to help them defend themselves is a natural act of a government trying to survive. This was not Iran or Russia invading Syria. The Iranians wouldn't have come in if there were no attempt to overthrow the government. So they had every right, as you pointed out, to invite whoever any friends they had to help them survive. This is natural, and any government would do that. Now, the Israelis, Hezbollah, by the way, I think is defending Lebanon. Even Lebanese Christians and Sunnis would agree with, as much as they hate, they may hate them. Well, they may not like them, but they realize that the Lebanese army isn't worth
Joe,
them.
Let me jump in here. Let me jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue more discussion on Syria. Stay with RP. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing the situation in Syria. Okay, let me go back to Richard in New York. Richard, I know you're a career diplomat, and diplomacy is sorely lacking these days around the world. But Richard, what a military strike against the Assad government in Damascus? What outcome would Washington be looking for in striking Syria? You said that they've backed away from regime change. I think that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. I think they would want to go all the way. I mean, what kind of behavior is it you're trying to enact here? I mean, this is the problem with military policy, because it doesn't really work with political outcomes. It has certain goals of destruction and threatening. It doesn't really talk about the political part of it. Go ahead, Richard, in New York.
Well, we certainly do need a clearer overall policy towards Syria. The strategy has been wanting, to put it mildly. Now, the question, though, what are we trying to accomplish by staying in? Why were 2,000, a very small number, there in northeastern Syria? We don't think, first of all, we don't think that the ISIS effort is totally ended. And we also know there are other groups ready to come in its wake if given the least opportunity. So what's needed is a strategy which develops the country as a whole as quickly as possible, involves the people with their own government as quickly as possible. After these years of warfare and massive killings and dislocations, it's not going to come easily. It's not going to come quickly. Well, but one thing we can contribute at the moment is the continued small military presence in the country, with ISIS very much at the top of our concerns.
Well, Richard, just the opposite is probably the truth. The U.S. maintaining its forces in Syria probably gives ISIS a reason to exist, to fight a foreign occupier. Number two, Richard, the U.S. government has already warned it will sanction third parties and countries that help Syria with its reconstruction. So getting all the people together and helping developing the country, that's already off the table. You'll be sanctioned. Okay, Michael, I could see you wanted to jump in there. Go ahead.
No, it's out.
Yeah, I this once again gets back to the whole point as to why U.S. forces are remaining in the Sunni-controlled area of eastern Syria, looking for bases, actually, that the Turks have complained about, in the Kurdish-controlled area. The whole idea is, I think, by the United States, if it's trying to resurrect a strategic policy of any kind, is to unite the Sunnis of East Syria with Western Iraq, and to maintain that presence there and control that area and basically partition Syria ultimately. Even though you have a little pocket of ISIS, but the United States is supporting entities and groups, militant groups still, such as Jaish al-Islam, which was in East Ghouta and has a capability, by the way, of launching chlorine gas and other weapons of mass destruction. They have actually admitted that in the past up in Aleppo earlier this year. So the United States is going to continue to support these Sunni-controlled groups. And I think ultimately it is to divide Syria, and with the help of the Saudis. The Saudis are paying for this, or they've offered money, and I think Trump may take it. That may be the only reason why he has decided not to pull out, because
well,
he got a good
you
deal.
Know, you know, Michael, isn't it really wonderful that the U.S. government pimps out the American military for a foreign power? What a disgrace. Mm-hmm. What a real disgrace, you know?
We're turning into
mercenaries.
For the
men and women for the people that work in the military to be pimped out by their own president to have, you know, some Wahhabi crazy regime in Saudi Arabia pay you. You know, wrap your head around that, okay? That's amazing, okay? Let me go to Joe here. I think, Joe...
It's happening.
It's happening. Let me go to Joe here. You know, what is happening to me is that there's such an uproar in the United States because of Russia, and this disease has transported itself across the Atlantic into Britain right now over another chemical weapons incident, which we see no evidence of whatsoever, just supposed to believe it. But Joe, they want to give Russia a bloody nose. They want to give Russia a bloody nose in Syria. The Russians have already made it very clear that they will not take those threats lightly, okay? Mm-hmm. That's why I'm very, very concerned. Go ahead, Joe.
Yes, I totally agree with you. Now, we have to understand that it's a fiction that the United States was fighting ISIS in Syria. I believe they were fighting them in Iraq. I think there were two separate wars. We know from this Defense Intelligence Agency document from 2012 that the U.S. Right. and its partners in the region and in Europe wanted to establish a Salafist principality, which later became ISIS. It was warned about that. Then we know from a John Kerry leaked audio that he was watching, we were watching ISIS advance on Damascus to try to get Assad to leave, exactly what that document had said, that to put pressure on ISIS. So there is no effort to defeat ISIS. Russia has defeated with Syria and Iran and Shia militias have defeated ISIS in Syria. They're not there for that reason. And we have to remember also from the campaign of Donald Trump, he wanted to cooperate with Russia in Syria. And so let's worry about the form of government later on, whether Assad stays or not. The real problem was ISIS. So I think I don't know who told him that, whether it was Bannon or whatever, or he just got a brilliant idea one morning, but that was the right policy that even Obama tried to implement, if you recall. He had Kerry try to work out a cooperation with Russia that Putin had called for.
Yeah, and Ash Carter destroyed, spoiled the party. Even when there is a legitimate or quasi-legitimate diplomatic attempt, it's destroyed by these hawks in the military.
And now, Peter, he wanted to withdraw the troops. If you read a piece in The New Yorker by Robin Wright, the generals were the ones who were supposed to be running the show, not the president. We have a civilian form of government here, not the generals. So, again, Trump's instincts are to say the right thing, but he's pulled back by those behind him. And this attack coming very fortuitously when he was about to withdraw the troops looks like the opposite's going to happen.
You know, Richard, why is the United States threatening the Damascus government when Damascus has been doing the heavy lifting to fight ISIS? And what the United States does every time it goes in there militarily, has its forces on the ground, it just dulls that attempt to fight terrorism. The U.S. policy is an impediment to fighting ISIS. I don't understand the logic here. Go ahead, Richard, in New York.
I flatly disagree with your assumption about at least the consistency of Syrian policy to fight ISIS.
What has the U.S. done in Syria that's right? What is, name one thing the United States has done right when it comes to Syria? One thing.
Well, we tried for many, many years to get Syria interested in opening up talks with the Israelis, and they were very, very reluctant to... come anywhere near that situation.
Why?
Hafez al-Assad did in his last years
Okay, I have no idea what that's supposed to mean. After 7 years of civil war, a proxy international war, it's because Assad didn't want to talk to the Israelis? Really?
No, don't misinterpret. I'm just saying that we have tried to do something positive in Syria. We did work on it extensively year after year, didn't get anywhere. Okay, so that's past. But it didn't leave a very good impression of Syria in Washington, I can tell you.
Well, I think
what they can do now.
You know, the Syrian people, after all of
the UN,
after the billions of dollars, the training, the funding, the salarying of these jihadists from outside the country, that's what the U.S. policy has been. And now they are illegally present there, illegally under international law. The Damascus government wants them out, and they won't leave. I mean, who's breaking the law here? Who's being an animal here, okay? This war could have ended a long time ago if it hadn't been backed by the United States, Saudi Arabia, the other Gulf countries, and Israel. It would have been over a long time ago. Go ahead, Michael. Do you want to jump in?
It could have been over a long time ago if they hadn't piled in and beaten up those kids down in Daraa.
Okay,
and on the first day of the protest,
there were violence, and it was from outsiders. This is very well documented. You know, don't tell me, you know, this is all peaceniks, you know, wandering around, you know, giving flowers to people, because that violence started on day one. Okay, Michael, you wanted to jump in.
Our relationship with the CIA, with Syria actually degraded in 2003 when we invaded Iraq. Yeah. The Syrians saw that this was going to happen. They had the back channel with the CIA.
They helped.
And when
they helped.
But to a point, they did. And then that's when they turned to the Pentagon just on the eve of the invasion to say, don't invade. We'll try to work this out. We'll even stage some 5,000 troops to go into Iraq for you to look for WMD. They saw what the outcome will be. So and everything went to pieces from then. That's when Assad really turned to Iran right after that. And that cannot be disputed. That is a fact. And I think that's when Iran and Syria really began to become closer. You got to keep in mind, Assad is a Shiite Alawite, so right. that was normal. And this is what upset Israel to a great extent. Our foreign policy in the United States has been to help implement Israel's foreign policy for years, and the Pentagon was the instrument for doing that.
Okay, Joe, 40 seconds. You end the program. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, well, John Bolton began this week his new job as national security advisor. He has a real thing for Iran. The Iranian presence in Syria might be what he ultimately be going after, even more than trying to overthrow Assad.
Yes, yeah. He is.
Yeah, it looks to me like always it's Iran. Always is at the very, very center. It has been since the revolution in 1979. And Trump, and he has surrounded him with a group of people that feel exactly the same way. People that lament the defeat in Vietnam. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. Many thanks to my guests in Washington and in New York. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk rules.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, CommunityPublicRadio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.